Welcome, everyone. This is the LaRouche Show for December 11th, 2010. That applause you may just have heard, I will call that for our guests, whom I'm going to welcome and announce in just a few seconds, but it was actually for the nice music we begin with every week. But our topic today is both scary and very exciting in this sense. We're in a do-or-die fight to defeat the British imperial system, now threatening the existence of civilization on the planet. But what we have is a very exciting perspective from the Pacific. And I'm very glad to be welcoming Lainey Rubinstein from the Eastern Rim of the Pacific out in Los Angeles. Lainey, you are with us?
I am totally with you.
Okay, thank you. And I also am glad to welcome who's in Los Angeles, Leona Fancheng. Welcome, Leona.
Hi, Marcia. Thank you.
And Leona is with the LaRouche Political Action Committee, and she is especially involved in the recent months of tremendous outreach for the North American Water and Power Alliance, NAWAPA, in those western states of direct impact and internationally. Leona has been doing many things in recent years, and teaching and otherwise, especially I think on Max Planck and many other things. But I didn't identify that Lainey, many of you know, is the EIR correspondent to the United Nations in New York City, and Lainey functions internationally and has spent time this fall in China and in Taiwan, which we'll hear about. I'm Marcia Mary Baker, and the only introduction I'd like to just say here is just to identify what most of our listenership know, that we are already into an economy that's breaking down with nonlinear patterns. We have a crisis situation of what we're going to do about this, and we have a showdown underway. Actually, in many respects, but you see it in the situation in Ireland, where the network of the imperialist financial control interests called the Inter-Alpha system has particular institutions that they're demanding the Irish government have its people give their blood and their firstborn to back up. In other words, have a bailout in the Eurozone of these casino debts that have been building up and are unpayable and unworthy. That's playing out. We're not in particular going to go through the particularities of this in the next hour. But one thing for sure, it may be an oxymoron, is the only thing you can predict right now is the unpredictable. And that is on the positive side, too. We have tremendous opportunity for a shift out of this track towards doom, into having the kind of emergency measures, the kind of LaRouche plan we've been discussing for some time of financial reorganization through the principle and the actual fact of the kind of 1933 Glass-Steagall Act we had under Franklin Delano Roosevelt, and the initiation of the emergency measures in the United States to keep states and cities and the actual fabric of the society and nation functioning, and to launch the kind of planet or intercontinental scale projects like the North American Water and Power Alliance. So what I'd like to do, Lainey, is if you open things up by your trip to China and Taiwan and the points you want to bring out about that, perhaps in contrast to the misery I'm just describing here in the United States, please do.
Yeah, because I just heard some comments from LaRouche where he said, yeah, we are sharing a terrible thing. And namely, after the election, and people are very pessimistic. And he said, look, you have to ask the citizen in the United States, do you have confidence in yourself? And then go out and burn tail. And I think to get... because pessimism, that's what gives you wrinkles on your soul and you become immobile. So that is a key thing to get rid of right away. And there the developments in China, which I think most people don't really know, are a very good image to put up for what can be done. Because I had the opportunity to work with young people in China, to teach young people, to talk with them, and then talk with people from, you know, professors, businessmen, bankers, and so forth. And what really struck me was two things: an incredible optimism, an idea about the future, a thinking about the future, not just for China, but for the world at large. It's like when you're optimistic, then you have the free energy to think about the whole world and the universe. So that was one part, and connected with that, which I think is very lawful, also was an unprecedented openness towards LaRouche's ideas, because it's not just so that there was like this just naive optimism, but also a very clear awareness that we have a collapse in the United States and the whole transatlantic region, and that it's very dangerous for China. So, and for Asia as a whole, for the whole world. There was no wishful thinking in that regard, that people had a clear idea about that. So I think, I mean, I just to kind of, just a few tidbits because of the hell we are looking at right now and which we had to change in the very days and weeks ahead here in the United States. As we are looking at that, China is building like crazy. They are planning, they have right now about 8,000 kilometers of fast-speed rail. I mean, something, the rails, trains that go 220 miles an hour. And they're planning to have 16,000 kilometers in 3 years and have these fast-speed rails connecting the country so that 90% of the Chinese population will have access to those fast-speed rail. They have huge water projects to take water where it's a lot of water up to the dry areas in the north, from south to north. And they have an ambitious program of building 500 nuclear power plants by year 2050. That is thinking about the future. And then, of course, totally connected with that, they're looking not just at the planet, but also have a firm commitment for a goal, a specific goal for when they're going to colonize the moon and when we're going to colonize Mars. And, of course, that also then is connected with all kind of intense research regarding fusion and other science frontiers. So that is what China is doing right now as we sit here and speak, and we are looking at this immediate break. Down, not just breakdown, blowout situation in the transatlantic region. And you can hold that up as an image for what we should be doing and what the world can be doing. So I think I will let it be with there for now.
Right. And I understand that let me say, you have a report I'd like people to know about that's in the latest EIR online that was posted this week. And I give the telephone number again for people to make a point to order more subscriptions. Even if you only have one, you can get it for somebody else. It's 800-278-3135. Get your pencil. I'll repeat it again in a minute. But you wrote something called Report from China. LaRouche's ideas are warmly welcomed in embattled China. Mm-hmm. And I think you're talking, with that, you're talking about the fact that, I think you mentioned when you were in Taiwan a few years ago, maybe 3 years ago, there was the view that maybe you could survive even if in that part of the world, even if the United States went down or the Eurozone went down, right?
Mm-hmm.
But this has changed?
That has completely changed. Now, every single person I encountered, every single meeting I addressed, people immediately will say, this is horrible, things are being destroyed, we are not going to make it, what is LaRouche proposing, what can we do? So this was mixed with a very, in Taiwan, that was mixed with a very great happiness and pride over what mainland China is doing and has been doing concerning infrastructural development in depth. And then looking at the other side, this horrifying paradox that everything could go down very fast. And also that this can go very fast. The blowout was also completely understood. 2 years ago, I had all these battles with people, bankers, businessmen, parliamentarians who would tell me, oh, no, we are going to make it over here in Asia. U.S. will go down, some of them even somewhat gleeful. But I did not meet that one single instance this time. People were aware that this is a global crisis, which was new to me.
Well, the other thing is I found interesting in your article, that when you recount, that perhaps it's to the young people, Lainey, that you were speaking with, you had to dramatize how miserable it's been in the United States with no one building anything here for so many decades.
Yeah, it's kind of funny because it's a little bit the same way when I come back now from China and tell people about what they're doing in China. And the Americans, wow, they get excited. But wow, are the Chinese really doing that? And so then you are in China, and then you have the opposite where you tell people that although they kind of know that U.S. has gone down, they don't really realize what it really means because it's like culturally in between the lines. Also, what this, for China's case, create the optimism where when you then tell them that the United States has not built a refinery for 30 years, that we do not have one single kilometer of fast-speed rail in the United States, where the Chinese will have 16,000 kilometers in 2.5 years or something. Or then we add to that all the firing of policemen, of firefighters, the homelessness of children now that goes to school. I mean, or including professors that have been in the United States many times, they would look at me with gaping mouths and they will say, oh, my God, I didn't know it was that bad. Oh, wow, is it really that bad? Because then they could kind of, in the same way I've had to kind of give an image of the developments in China coming back for people to kind of really get it, I had to do the same in China because the contrast is so, so stark.
Right. I think your list, it just occurs to me, no source of medical isotopes for radioactive imagery. You have to get them from, I think, Holland or Canada if they're in supply, you know, et cetera. The list you have is something. Let me just ask in passing then if we could pursue what you just touched on, the deeper issue of what kind of cultural outlook, and you mentioned pessimism right at the beginning, but do you want to add anything to Lainey's picture at this point, Leona, or no?
Yeah, what we've seen so far over the past past few months even of organizing is this contrast actually in even the Chinese figures out here is that they have a sense of they shine in the bunch because they do have a type of optimism that is quite unique even amongst the engineers and scientists.
That's right. Let's put a plug right in here for LaRouchePack.com. On the Political Action Committee website, right, Leona, in the last 36 hours, there's a new page you can go on to see different, to see participants at, there's a whole series of conferences on the North American Water and Power Alliance and Science Drive right now. You just had one in Pasadena. There was one in up in southeastern Washington and Kennewick. As we speak, there's one in Montreal, one in Boston. But the people's speeches at these and otherwise interviews and so forth is now all available in one place on LaRouchePack.com, which is must viewing every day. But so you're seeing the Chinese working here or Chinese Americans are in the forefront of and are responding to what's involved in the North American water and power lines.
Yes. Yes, both the people who they're Chinese-Americans, basically, people who even have been here for decades,
uh-huh.
but who have some connection to the developments in China, have a very unique cultural outlook and optimism. And when you present them with a project like this, they would never say, we've never gotten a response saying, oh, what is this going to do for these wild creatures? Or, I like the desert, or... some of these insane things, or, you know, this can't be done. You just don't get those type of responses out of this crowd. So it is a very distinct cultural environment that sees certain figures come out of, including the people that you'll see that presented at this last conference in L.A.
Mm-hmm. Do you want to describe that just a bit?
Sure, yeah. We had a few people who were from various backgrounds, structural engineer, construction management, civil engineer, and two hydrological engineers, and a few members from the basement who discussed the biological implications, the sort of Vernadskian implications.
Mm-hmm.
And the two hydrologists were both Chinese, and you can see it. For example, there was one presentation on environmental impacts. And normally when you see environmental impacts on a description for a conference, for example, you would expect, you know, what are human beings, how are human beings going to destroy the planet again, and so on. So you would expect them to be talking about. But no, his conclusion was this was going to create great, wonderful environmental impacts, including more life and fresh water and so on.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just a different approach.
Yeah, I'm speaking a bit formally. It certainly is in opposition to just what finished last night or this morning in Mexico, the Cancun conference, right? Which is the great hoax of decades of saying the planet's overheating due to mankind's presence. And that kind of thing.
Right.
So this is, it couldn't be better, this, or it couldn't be clearer, the contrast. Well, let me ask either one of you, you mentioned in terms of this cultural outlook you're talking about, what's embedded, what's manifest in the Chinese Americans or others who aren't so beaten down and pessimistic here. Lainey, there's a kind of, you've referred in some sense to the long wave of the still sense of heritage in China of Sun Yat-sen, or the idea that that nationhood and mankind should be building things. Could you go into that? You were attending a memorial for Sun Yat-sen in Taiwan, right?
Well, can you hear me?
Perfectly.
Okay. So, yeah, actually, I want to take just a little bit further step back,
mm-hmm.
because... in 1810, quite a group of founding Americans formed an organization, and I don't have the exact name of it, but there was something like American Missionaries Commission or something like that. But it was
right.
formed in 1810 by John Quincy Adams, John Jay, Boudinot IV, and others. And their idea, as stated in the founding documents of this missionary society, was not just to go what they wanted to do was to go to Asia, to not only cross the United States, but cross the Pacific, and to spread the key idea to do good, what
mm-hmm.
we also had coming from the compact, from the Mayflower, and from the beginning here of the United States. So to do good, that was the key thing, to go to get to know, for example, in the case of Hawaii or Thailand, Japan, and so forth, to get to know some people, let's say, from Hawaii, get to know their language, give them a written language, bring printing, teachers, and so forth, and go and teach the key ideas that laid the foundation for the United States. To counter the British, that was a very explicit purpose to counter the ideas of the British Empire in Asia to send those delegates over there. And it was actually out of that, well, it's out of that you had the Meiji Restoration in Japan, but it's also out of that you had the whole development in Hawaii, and it's out of those developments and this very missionary association that was set up in 1810 that Sun Yat-sen came out of. That was the people that converted him to Christianity. They also built the hospital where he became a medical doctor down in Hong Kong.
Uh-huh.
But the battle for how you view man and how you view society go way back. And the founding Americans looked at this very clearly, that we must spread those ideas. But then take Sun Yat-sen. He worked very closely with leading people in Russia and in Germany, very specifically Walter Rathenau, where they actually had intense studies of Friedrich List, the German-American, and Friedrich List's work on national economy. And they had like a study group as young people. And in 1919, Sun Yat-sen, right after the ending of the First World War, he writes a program called On the International Development of China. And what that program is a in-depth plan for a development of China, but also stretching across Eurasia and into Africa. And all the great projects that we see today taking place in China with the Three Gorges Dam, the railroad networks, the building of harbors, and so on, comes from Sun Yat-sen's program.
Uh-huh.
But more than that, I think more importantly, and that I really would like to touch upon, is that in the preface to his program, Sun Yat-sen writes that with the Versailles Treaty, the basis had been laid for a second world war. And he said, only if my program is being adopted can we secure peace. And because he said the basis for peace is that the nations collaborate with each other around a common principle for mutual development, that is, the advantage of the other. And that is exactly the total opposite to an imperial policy of what the British Empire is conducting to this day. Sun Yat-sen wrote later on a really sharp book called The Vital Problem of China, in which he describes in detail how the British Empire are going to use Japan against the nations of Asia, and very specifically China. And he warns very sharply in that book, too, about the British. As he says, never become a friend of the British, because you're going to be destroyed if you become a friend of Britain. So the whole idea, namely, of developing the continents, was a total counter to the maritime powers and a manipulation of nations. And the idea of developing the populations of those nations and the in-depth infrastructure is the total counter to imperial policy, what we're seeing today, where the Inter-Alpha Group, as gunners for the British Empire, are trying to induce the United States to destroy its manufacturing base, as we have seen the result of now. And Sun Yat-sen was a total counter to that. So you have it in the Chinese culture, or in the Chinese history. And I just wanted to add one more thing regarding that, which is fascinating to me, both negatively and positively. But if you think about a culture, when you begin to change, when you begin to build the way that China is building now, this is touching upon some aspects that are invisible in the culture, so that there can become an urge to grow and to revive the most beautiful and important things from the past in the culture. So you have like an acceleration of cultural strength being ignited through the optimism. So I just wanted to add one.
I think it's a beautiful concept. And when you raise it, I get an idea. Do you have some sense, were you thinking of Sun Yat-sen and that heritage, or were you thinking of something concrete that people turned
well,
to?
Well, I'm thinking about how China has been reviving the ideas from the Tang Dynasty, Confucius.
Okay.
LaRouche just recently took up one of the writings of Confucius, namely the Book of Changes.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't have the quotes here in front of me, but basically in there, Confucius takes up how the universe is harmonically ordered, how the moon knows where it's supposed to go and doesn't make any mistakes. The sun knows where it's going to go and doesn't make any mistakes.
Mm-hmm.
And that everything is harmonious and it's in constant change, in a harmonious process, and that involves, of course, mankind too, very emphatically. So, which is, and that Confucius is being revived again, and of course the highest for Confucius was the question about love, and love on a higher notion, and it, this is from where one of Sun Yat-sen's, I mean, Sun Yat-sen was totally steeped in Confucius, in the classics. He had finished studying that when he was 13, 14 years old. And one of the key things he would use, many things from Confucius, but one of the things was Qian Xia Wei Gong, which means that the world is for everybody. The universe is for everybody, that all are mankind. That is an idea about the general welfare. So this is all being... this is all through the language culture being revived in a very intense way.
Well, let me not try and go from the sublime to the non-sublime, let me call it that. It isn't just ridiculous, but also there is the clear sense in the history in China of the Opium War and other aspects of the British, the invasion of Tibet or the Uyghur uprising supported out of London, that either Leona or Lainey, maybe you want to comment on how there is a contrast between people being able to understand the menace of the empire in China and Asia as compared with the dumbed-downness here in the United States.
Well, when you take up the British Empire, I've done that a lot.
Okay.
Then first people are a little bit disbelieving, but it doesn't stick that deep. And of course, what we did in our organization is we reprinted Sun Yat-sen's book that I mentioned before, The Vital Problem of China, because it had not been reprinted in Chinese since 1947.
Yeah.
And I am totally convinced that the reason for it is that of the content. So I read it in English, and then when I realized that none of my Chinese friends knew about this piece, I had it published in Chinese. And every time I bring this up, people are very excited. And there is, you don't have to stick very deep. You just have to remind about the Opium War. And people are also very excited about to figure out how the British have played Asia, specifically through using Japan in the Japanese-Russian War, Japan attacking China, Japan attacking Korea, and so forth. And I have often used the examples of Europe, how exactly the same thing that was done in Asia was done in Europe. That is to play the nation, set them up against each other, and then you can sit from outside and control the whole thing, which is exactly what Sun Yat-sen describes in this little gem of his, The Vital Problem of China. So he knew it, and it is there in the culture. You just have to revive it.
And it's a stark contrast to U.S. general acknowledgement of the British Empire, definitely, because, you know, right now, LaRouche, last week, for example, LaRouche expressed it very clearly as F the British Empire.
Yeah.
And you know, we've made that very clear to the population that your enemy is not all these other ghosts that you're trying to attack, but it is the British Empire. And now... the clarity of what the British Empire is not, it's just, it's dull. in the society right now, in the American population. There is some sense, especially from the American Revolution and basically prior to World War II, but really people who have been, especially the younger people who have lived their lives, we'll say the baby boomer generation on down,
right.
But especially, of course, the youngest now who have only lived since George Bush, unfortunately.
Mm.
They have no sense, really, of what the British Empire is, how it manipulates countries through currency and through manipulation and political manipulation and so on. And so that has to be almost built up. But it isn't from scratch, because no matter how bad the United States gets, no matter how much of a dark age it gets into, there really always is an underlying knee-jerk reaction. And it's in the founding of the country, and therefore it really can never be taken away. So there is something that we're building upon. And this is also why NWAPA is so effective as a organizing concept, because we're not just bringing back a project, but we've been bringing back the whole view, the whole optimistic trend or vision that was during Kennedy's time.
Right. In fact, I happened to see in September an interview you did on LPAC TV, and you said two things. One thing is about students. You were talking about organizing among young people, students. They need the history. They don't know the sense of TVA or Apollo, I think you used, and others. And you just mentioned that again. If you have to go through with people, young people, the currency manipulation, the political, maybe the music manipulation, that's another one, literally the empire. But do you want to say more about that? Are you involved in camp? You are, oh, certainly you're involved in campuses, but you want to say more about that?
Oh, sure.
Filling in the history for people, what actually brings it alive for them?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, in discussing where we need to go from here,
mm-hmm.
namely the Glass-Steagall policy, getting rid of Obama, and the NWAPA policy, and so on, you immediately require a lot of background if you don't already have it.
Mm-hmm.
So you can say the TVA of the 21st century, and that won't mean anything
mm-hmm.
to the younger generations. You can say that this is the type of thinking. The NWAPA was just indicative of the type of thinking that the general population had when we were going to the moon, and that also doesn't have very much effect. Unless, you know, you provide some background. This is why these videos have been so crucial. This is why we've been producing all these videos on LPAC TV.
Mm-hmm.
To provide this type of background. But really also the focus really has to be made that the history books just don't teach you the British Empire. They don't teach you that FDR did these things in an explicit opposition to the empire policies. And he said it during his inaugural speech, and he said it again in the next inaugural speech, and everything in between. And that really was his character. And it's not said in history books, and even if it was said, they probably don't teach it anymore.
Yeah, you have to reprint it, as Lainey was talking about with Summits.
Right, yeah. And so that's a lot of the work out in the field, but the crash and the fact that we have the solution is the gateway to provoking the mind to want to figure out what this history is and what the foundation that we have to move on is.
Yeah, maybe what you said about the crash is the gateway. In other words, people's, in other words, they're jarred, right? I mean, it's kind of being hit over the head. So there is, it's the potential for a shift. It's a shame. It's painful, right? And
it's
causing misery. But would you, yeah, go ahead.
Well, it's the contrast, because the point that we've been making with people is that something like, for example, the type of mobilization, the type of industrialization of a nation you would have, that you would require to have something like the North American Water and Power Alliance, that's not just something we could do.
Mm-hmm.
But the point to make, the point we've really made clearly to people we've outreached to, is that, look, this is the direction we were in 1964. And this is at a time where we had a clear step-by-step plan to go be on Mars in 1984. So that was the direction we were in. Now, the fact that we are not there isn't just something too bad. Oh, that would have been nice. But it shows you how much we're basically back in the Stone Age.
Mm-hmm.
We've reversed, or at least haven't progressed. So it is something you have to say, look, this is where we are. This is where we should be, not where we could be. And make that contrast.
Yeah, right. So then that's in a whole new degree of, it puts people in the situation of having to face what they're committed to. I think, Lainey, you opened the discussion by referring to Lynn saying you have to put it to people and oneself. Do you have the confidence in yourself? This is what you have to do. Let me ask another thing, because specifically about Obama, Leona, and I was looking a few months ago in the midst of organizing for NWAPA, but you were interviewed on LaRouche PAC at that time in September, and you said at the time, one thing that's apparent to people even then and young people, that the 25th Amendment or this idea is a no-brainer. That's, would you comment on people's reaction that they should be doing everything, that Obama has to be set aside?
Yeah, I mean, that's become, it's become a growing sense of tension, because it is one of those things that it's very paradoxical. If it makes complete sense that someone that's nonsensical shouldn't be president, then why is he still there?
Okay.
And so that is the general response we're getting. And, of course, then the response from us is, well, fight with us. Insanity is ruling right now, and it shouldn't. And so, yeah, that is still very much and increasingly the sentiment amongst the population.
Right. Do you have anything else? Lainey, seeing this from abroad, you must have been, and did you encounter people saying, why is this going on? Why is there, how's people view of Obama in particular, but of the fact of there being such a kind of crazy government in Washington?
Actually, people, there's two aspects to this, because first, people were kind of happy to figure out when I told them that he was a sick man.
Okay.
And how he was sick, because it can be clinically stated. I mean, he is a sick person, and therefore he is used. And when you, by the British Empire, and when you told them that this is how it was done, like with Hitler was also used by as a puppet to be put in there, and they actually have the same disease. People were relieved that, oh, this is what is wrong. But then, funny with the Chinese, because they don't understand how could we allow in the United States, because the United States is regarded as a great nation. So how could we allow that to happen? because that's also in a complete contrast to how the Chinese are now selecting their leadership. It's being groomed, it's being tested, psychological tested. They are being put on different tasks, responsibilities they have to take to see if they can handle it. And, I mean, the Chinese leadership is being groomed for years. They already now know who's the next leadership going to be. So, therefore, for us to elect here an insane person and an impotent Congress is a little, like, almost not believable.
Yeah, Dr. Chang, who had presented at our conference, had mentioned that the ministers or the board in China are... I think there's 9 of them, and 8 of them are engineers, and 1 of them is a geologist.
Uh-huh. Oh, on the current set of sitting ministers, they're all scientists and engineers? I wonder if the connection is still there.
It is.
Okay. Well, I'll just wait for Leona or Lainey to respond.
Hello?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
It seemed the connection went off there for a moment. But...
Yeah, it went off with Leona's telephone.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
But Lainey, so... I think she was just saying, Leona was saying, is this right, Lainey, that the current board of actual government ministers...
I didn't know that, but this makes total sense to me.
Okay.
Because this is really planned out. And there's also a real concern China has made some mistakes, but there has been a real concern to figure out how to get rid of those mistakes, how to do the right thing for the nation.
Mm-hmm.
The whole thing regarding how can we get rid of poverty in China? A key thing with these infrastructure programs and where the railroads should go and so forth has been to lift people out of poverty.
Mm-hmm.
So there's been this whole concern, let's figure out what is the right thing to do. So therefore you don't risk anything. You really plan out in depth and you have top qualified, as best you can qualify people to take leading positions. And I must say that this whole cultural shift that I mentioned earlier, where it kind of have an inter reaction to each other to become stronger and stronger. I was so impressed by the young people I encountered. And that was one of the universities that are providing the future leaders for China.
Uh-huh.
And they were good. Those young people could think. They were independently thinking. They were good. They had a sense that they had a purpose in life, that there's a future ahead of them. And I mean, if you have such young people, then you know that that tells you something for the future, that you have such young people being developed. And LaRouche pointed out to me when I brought this up, because I was highly impressed, he said, well, it is 2 years, 2 generations since we had the opening up.
Mm-hmm.
So, and therefore, you have 2 generations that has then come to this. Plus, for them now being young people, it's totally normal to see nuclear power plants going up, to take a train every so often that drives 220 miles an hour and so forth. Everything is shifting very fast. So, for the good. So it makes total sense to me that they would, Dr. Howard Chang told Leona, that makes completely sense to me. They were also because they were so shocked that we actually could allow, that we hadn't even screened, that this guy Obama had no background, no experience, and he hadn't even been psychologically screened, and now it turns out he's actually insane.
Right.
And that is shocking for a person in China.
Right. Well, I have 2 lines of question there. Let me ask, is Leona hooked back in? Do we know, Lainey? Otherwise, but I
hold on a second. Are you hooked back on, Leona? No.
Okay.
But she can grab the phone.
Okay. Well, one thing, let me ask you, Lainey, just for, but you, the, what you just mentioned where you say people are qualified, but they're also going to go ahead, even if something might not have worked out. But all there are many things, such as the very high elevation railroad built to Tibet, and other kinds of projects. You've been back and forth to China for many, many years. And different things stand out in your mind that people don't know about. It's not that they don't know about at all. But, you know, there are very specific engineering and other challenges, and the idea is you just go ahead. You don't hold back.
No, that's not what I meant.
Okay,
what
thanks.
I meant is that they had a policy earlier where you concentrated on the coast and producing exports, using cheap labor and using a lot of energy, actually. I mean, when I mean energy, I mean investments into roads, railroads, electricity, and so forth for foreign companies that could come in, use cheap Chinese labor, and then produce goods that could be exported to the United States and Europe, but nothing really of substantial was put back into the country.
Right.
And LaRouche then has again and again taken this up and warned the Chinese and said, this is not right, you have to change your policy. And a very, very important aspect is that LaRouche has been followed more and more intensely through the last several decades. Immediately when China opened up, some of LaRouche's writings was translated, and you had Helga LaRouche presenting some of these key ideas of development in the mid-90s at a government-sponsored conference in Beijing. LaRouche warned about Asia being attacked in the beginning of 1997, and it happened, and people were really shocked about that. And I had personally very sharp experiences after LaRouche's last warning in 2007 that everything was going to go, where I got contacted by high officials regarding that because they remembered LaRouche's earlier warnings. So if you think about the actions that China has done to change the direction of what they're doing away from just export-oriented, and if you think about LaRouche's warning, and we had just recently both in People's Daily talking about Greenspan creating the bubble and how that had destroyed the manufacturing base, or China Daily, how they would come out and say that what is being done now in the United States is like Weimar Germany in 1923. This is only LaRouche that has come out saying these things. And therefore, because there is concern in China for really taking care of China and China's future, China's sovereignty, they are listening in a totally different way to LaRouche because of what he represents, trying to figure out how to learn from LaRouche. And this is very clear. So that's what I meant, concern. There has been mistakes, but there has been a willingness also to figure out what kind. So I didn't mean it concerning the high elevation railroads and so forth, because everything has been functioning pretty good.
Yes.
And the most response we get, and I know Leona has that a lot, experienced that a lot, is with the work with the Chinese scientists that are coming around, is that when they have a problem, okay, a problem is to solve, but that doesn't mean you don't go ahead.
Right. One thing about something very basic, and I know Leona spoke about
She's
this.
She's listening in.
Oh, good. About a year ago, I think, with a Chinese spokesman who, Mr. Da Wei, about something so basic as food and agriculture, Lainey and Leona. And it was pointed out, I think he pointed out, that China was definitely committed to move against the tenet of the WTO and the World Trade Organization and the British Empire, that you weren't supposed to have any food reserves. This is a very basic thing. Do you remember that, Leona? Did you talk to him about that? And so they are, to the degree you can, having or maintaining food reserves, which absolutely is against the WTO, right?
Right, and it's still the case now that, you know, LaRouche warned, I think, just a couple of months ago, that we are running into a case here where you have a very real threat of a food crisis because of these idiotic policies.
Yes, and the if you look at it on a world scale, and with certain things that happen on different continents, because we haven't had the bioengineering to make food secure, which you easily could. So you get a drought in Eurasia or you get a flood somewhere else. So we are in that kind of we're insecure for no reason except the prevalence of the British Empire imposition of this kind of backwardness. And that takes me around, Leona. I want to ask again in the remaining minutes of anything you want to bring out about the organizing at large or based on some of the, because of the December 4th Western States conferences that you just had on NAWAPA. And I understand if you want to say anything about upcoming, there's going to be a very important Pacific Rim conference on the North American Water Power Alliance approach to the whole world in San Francisco or in the Bay Area somewhere on January 8th. But Leona, what could you look ahead, what you're trying to, or what's going on?
Sure, yeah. The main thing is that the type of organizing that LaRouche began and we've launched with and have moved with is exactly the right way to go, because it doesn't take a genius right now to know that the economy is collapsing into a pit of hell. Most people know that. That's not something you really need to explain to people as you might have had to maybe 6 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
That's not the ignorance of a crash is not the reason why people are not moving. And a lot of people come up to our table and say, okay, yeah, I agree with you. Obama should go. Great. These are great ideas, but it's never going to happen.
Mm.
Or, okay, then what? Are you going to have, what are you going to have next? Another corrupt or insane figure? And so on. You have these pessimistic sayings. But if you start on it from the opposite direction, if you start it from a top down, then you can really draw out an imagination of this population. And mainly, if you start from NAWAPA, if you start from the type of not only country, but planet and human species that you could easily have. Like, for example, NAWAPA has a time scale of 30 years. Most people we talk to really, you know, are going to be alive or are going to have children who are going to be alive in 30 years.
Yeah, it's not long.
It's not a long time scale at all. Right? And so you could have this, for example, in 30 years. Now, you lay that idea out for people and all the implications, including an industrialized continent, the type of sciences that haven't really been taken up since the early 1900s, including cosmic ray activity on biological processes and these basic elements of understanding that we really haven't taken up. You lay that type of future out for people and you say, okay, the population says, oh, okay, well, that's something I could fight for. Well, why do we have these trivial things that we're still dealing with?
Mm-hmm.
Then there's something on the horizon. There's something sort of over the hill. It's more like it. And then you say, okay, well, to get this thing through, you need Glass-Steagall. You need a proper banking. You need a credit system. Before that, you need to get Obama out.
Mm-hmm.
So that really has been a more in-depth reason of why people need to act right now. And as a result, we're having very a higher quality of a people's movement right now.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's great. I promised before I mentioned the telephone because people are on LaRouchePub.com. Who are listening live or on the archive, I repeat, this is the 10th of December, Saturday, 2010. This is Marcia Mary Baker and our guests, Lainey Rubenstein and Leona Fensheng. Especially on the perspective from the Pacific, but I want to say you call 800-278-3135. That's 800-278-3135. And until their last one is sold out, I'm plugging Dope Inc., the book, because it's there are a few left from the 1,000-run printing that was just done a month ago. And this certainly, this was first printed in the 1970s. And I guess you could say this laid down the gauntlet with the British Empire at the time, since it carried all the documentation of the pedigree, the imperial British pedigree, and who the bad guys of the world were, who ran the dope, who did the opium trade up through the 1920s, which was still on the books in Singapore and elsewhere, who were these banks that... And that their bloodline goes up into 1971 when some of them formed the Inter Alpha Group, now trying to, ruin the world. So please get that. And in the final minutes, Lainey, well, either one of you, but let me ask you, Lainey, you were looking ahead to the new year, but I'm not saying any of us wait around. We should do what Leona was just saying. We have to take up, there's every reason why you fight more than you ever thought you could beginning now. But Lainey, you've been telling me at different times about the exciting, it's a kind of cross feed, the new leverage that you and Leona are talking about on both sides of the Pacific with American-based or Chinese-Americans and others figuring this can be done. There's a shift really underway of changing the outlook among masses of people potentially in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
So could you say more?
Well, can you hear me?
Oh, yes. Go ahead. Oh,
okay. I think that the combination of the image from China that are doing what the United States used to do and what would be natural for the United States to do today, combined with the scientists that are now coming together around the LIMS, organizing for an committee.
Uh-huh.
To advise regarding the great program for America, namely the North American Water Alliance,
uh-huh.
and how that would be a signal for the world, and how you have a key ingredients in that are the Chinese scientists here on the West Coast, because you have, China is a natural ally to the United States, and that they are doing what they are doing right now really is an image, an example for poor nations in Africa and Asia and elsewhere, and very much sends a signal to the soul of the United States. This can be done. We can do this. It's a very good thing to hold up for people that are pessimistic because, just cut it out and let's get on with business. Let's go out and burn some tail. And do what the United States was created to do and kick out the British. So I also want to use the occasion to say that there is a conference up in San Francisco, and it'll be a very special conference because of very special developments that you're going to hear on. If you stay tuned on LPAC TV tomorrow, you'll have some totally exciting developments. And in that connection, there is a NAVAPA conference in San Francisco on the 8th of January,
mm-hmm.
2011, but it will have a very specific extra significance because of developments that you will hear on LPAC TV tomorrow if you go in and watch the Down with the Traders.
Great. And so that will be December 12th. Many people are listening by phone message line also, Lainey,
mm-hmm. okay.
as well as LaRouche. So Lainey is saying, look at LaRouchePack.com, December 12th, and already put the December 8th, 2011 date clear on your own horizon. And, of course, I'm sure the resources required to do all this, the need speaks for itself, and the excitement speaks for itself.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess we're into the last few seconds. And with that, I'd like to thank Leona Fancheng for being on. Thank you, Leona, in Los Angeles.
Oh, she got that. I'll tell her. She's...
Okay, and that's Lainey Rubenstein. We thank you as always, and we want you to be on in the new year
okay.
and have more updates. And go ahead. Did you want to say a final parting, Lainey?
No.
Okay, good.
That's fine. Let's just go out and fight. Take the British out of America.
Yes, there's nothing
well,
better.
For the world, huh?
Nothing. This is the new year. That'll be something to celebrate.
Okay.
Thank you very much. This has been the LaRue Show. This is Marcia Mary Baker. We're signing off. And thank you. This is December 11th, 2010.